Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast, where we discuss news and information related to ASX-listed companies and financial markets, keeping investors informed. Note that the content in this podcast is not financial or investment advice, and be sure to head over to smallcaps.com.au to get the latest market news. Now, without further delay, here's today's podcast.
Hello again. Great to have your company. Welcome to the Small Caps Podcast. I'm Peter Capsanis. Well, one of the interesting predicaments that's emerged from the COVID-19 pandemic is our change in attitude to cash. Is cash a dirty word again? There's an increasing number of businesses who refuse to deal with cash. Payment by card is often a sign you'll see at a shop or business. In fact, the reliance on card or cashless transactions has intensified so much, many bank branches have shut their doors. The Commonwealth Bank said that more than three quarters of all digital transactions were on a debit card during the height of the outbreak. We know that the shift to cashless has been swift, but how does all this technology work? And if you are a merchant, how can you go cashless? I'm joined now by an Aussie startup called The Payment App, which has developed the payment engine for all these cashless payments. We're joined now by CEO Alan Evans and founder Benjamin Banks. Gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Peter.
Alan, I'll start off with you first. Tell me about The Payment App. Why does it exist?
Well, it exists to do three things, Peter. The core part of the business is our payment services, which includes our payment gateway, which handles and processes all the payments between a consumer and the merchant. We've got data as a service, and the data engine is, if you like, the secret sauce in our whole tech stack offering. And the third part of our business are payment apps that we built and we operate, which handle a complete ecosystem between the customer and the merchant in vertical markets like hospitality or petrol. And they're designed basically so the customers can pay contactlessly for things that they're buying regularly and buying a lot of. So we're going to be taking a stake in the market, offering those end-to-end payment apps as well as running that wholesale back-end system for the payment services and the data engine.
All right, okay. So let's get into the nitty-gritty a little bit more. Ben, how does the technology work? I guess when I hear something about a cashless transaction payment app, so I think of PayPal or Square. Is this using the same technology, or is it same but different?
Same but different, but also evolving past what those two previous companies you mentioned are. So if we look at payments as it exists today, there's things called e-wallets and stored value mechanics, which is PayPal, and sort of, you know, digital companies like that. Square is a more traditional card scheme, so a Visa, MasterCard, Diners, JCB sort of environment. What we're looking at doing is moving past that, leveraging, you know, self-sovereign identity, open banking, here in Australia with the new payments platform, certain FPOS and card scheme mechanics, and combining all those into a fairly robust engine that leverages both consumer insight information coupled with fraud mechanics for an AI-driven environment.
Okay, so in English, is it just about? I'm not trying to be smart in that when I say that comment, but I guess we already use tap and go. We use Square for mobile merchants. So
yeah,
I guess you're, from what the little reading that I've done on your startup is you're actually combining the data and the transaction facilitation, and then adding a value add. So break that down for me. So I guess who would use your technology and your app?
Okay. So let's take the concept of tap and go. Moving forward, the instrument, as I refer to it as, the instrument of payment becomes irrelevant. In a more modern society. We're no longer a deposit-taking society. We're a transactional environment, and that's the core of what we're trying to do. So how a consumer pays a business becomes irrelevant to the way that the consumer does it and how the merchant receives it. No one cares how they pay, and a merchant doesn't care how they get paid so long as they get paid and that they receive Aussie dollars. The instruments that make that happen are kind of irrelevant in the grand scheme of things moving forward. So whether it be a card, a ring, a phone, a watch, a carrier pigeon, smoke signals, leprechauns, whatever, it doesn't matter so long as Aussie dollars ends up in the account. So taking all that into account, what we've looked to do is bring together all the old stuff and look to what all the new stuff will be and how to leverage that into one ubiquitous environment that enables the fastest and most streamlined point from A to B, and then creating additional data touch points along the way so that everybody can feel more secure in the transaction.
So, and that's
so Peter, let me highlight another point for you.
Sure.
At the moment, in a bricks and mortar business, you can take payment from a customer in terms of cash. You can take a credit card payment or a debit card payment. That's pretty much it. No one's using checks anymore, and we don't accept coconuts. Haven't done that for a while. But if you're on the online world, the only way you can take a payment is pretty much via credit card. That's it. It's the only option you've got. So all the other payment guys are simply offering scheme card payments for you to accept cash. We're changing that paradigm. So we're going to be giving businesses the opportunity to take, just like you can transfer money via OSCO on the new payment platform, we're going to be offering people the ability to take payments by scheme card, take it by direct debit, take it by the NPP, and open up this myriad, even FPOS, open up this myriad of different payment mechanics to allow businesses to have more choice and more options, give a better experience to their customer. But then along the way, in addition to that, open up data sources that they've never had access to before, which relate to the purchase, who's done the purchase, what they've purchased, etc. So we're really, if you like, ripping open the possibilities in terms of how people pay, but then benefiting the merchant so that they've got more data so they can sell more, and then at the same time reduce their fraud because the customer transactions are going to be more validated.
So
does that help you?
Yeah. Look, I think that's a very forensic breakdown. I guess at the point of sale system, your technology or your app is going to actually generate a whole suite of other data collection that's going to be used by, I guess, the business and the merchant, possibly. Is that right?
Yeah. So whether it's a physical in-store point of sale or an e-commerce shopping cart environment, there is data and mechanics on both sides, whether it be on the merchant and the merchant's bank side and the consumer and the consumer's bank side. There is information that has remained, you know, sort of out of the equation for either side, where they know a little bit, but they don't know everything. And the bit they don't know is also the bit that we can use to engage more and create continually increasing transactions between the two parties, but also provide a deeper insight so that the parties have a more safe and secure environment in dealing with each other.
So what kind of deeper insights would a merchant or a business hope to gain from this data collection? What are the sort of the nuts and bolts that they're missing at the moment, do you think?
Yeah, okay. So going sort of really broad into sort of our sort of longer term strategy, one of our key verticals that we're getting into is residential tenancy payments. So it's actually collecting the rent and enabling the rent to be paid and that stuff. With that comes a huge amount of information that we have around where a consumer lives, how close they are to stores, you know, within certain instances, certain spending habits and other things. We can then tailor that information so a merchant can come along, plug into our API, and rather than in their current environment where they're, you know, sort of taking a shot in the dark and trying to hit as many people as they can be very specific in who they go to and sell someone, you know, who, you know, let's take mechanics as an example. You know, someone needs a car service, or they've just moved into an area and they want to sell them a welcome pack from a greengrocer, or all those sorts of things. But it's creating a more streamlined path between two parties. And then on the other side, where you've got the merchant, it's giving him knowledge and, you know, information that the person he is selling to is actually Bob or Mary or Jane, and that the mechanic that Bob and Mary and Jane are using to pay him is actually Bob and Mary and Jane's mechanic. So it's their card, it's their bank account, it's those sorts of things. You know, this has always been a problem, particularly with scheme cards, that, you know, people lose their 16 digits, they're expiring their CVV, and, you know, very unsavory characters go and buy things online for themselves.
Mm. And are you seeing a more, do you think there's a demand, an increasing demand for those insights and for those specific, I guess, data collection, because it becomes an effective marketing tool as a result?
Yeah.
Absolutely, Peter. Look, the situation at the moment, what's really unknown out there in the business community is how much anyone running an online business or a mobile app-based business are getting it in the neck from the banks on chargebacks to do with any type of customer complaint in relation to the payment. So loosely, that'll turn up in fraud figures. But what we know, because we've run our own apps ourselves and we're sitting inside the circle, is that customers can simply call the bank and say, look, that wasn't an approved transaction, I want the money back. Now, no questions asked, that money is ripped out of the business. Now, that business may well have fulfilled the order, sent the goods, the customer's enjoying those goods, but there is no onus or responsibility on the part of the customer to validate their claim. It's simply no questions asked, ripped off the business. And when you've got people who are gaming the system, you're talking about purposeful fraud, but without their card or their mechanic having been stolen. They're just using the system to get freebies. And there's nothing the business can do about it. There's no ombudsman they can complain to. There's no adjudicator they can go to. They simply have to take it in the neck as the bank takes the money off. And we think that's an absolute crime. So providing services to businesses that they can actually prevent that, we think that's a great thing.
Okay. Yeah.
And to be very specific on that, Peter, to give you an exact example, and I won't say which one of the big four, but one of the big four banks has redone it. What's referred to as its merchant terms and conditions, where they've literally gone down the path of, we're going to assume you're wrong, Mr. Merchant, and not give you a chance to say you're right. We're just going to say you're wrong and refund the money. And then you can go off and talk to the customer and try and solve it direct with them, but we don't want to be a party to it anymore. So it's not, you know, innocent before proven guilty. It's guilty because you're guilty.
Yes. Okay.
So there has to be a service that business can tap into that can validate the customer with the mechanic. And that's where we step in, because no one in the industry is doing it. The banks might be able to, the scheme cards might be able to, but they are just not doing it. We've got a way of doing it with our data engine. And that's part of the core proposition of what this business is all about.
Just refresh my memory, because it did come up in some of that information I was reading about the company before we came on air. But you'll be able to tell me, Ben, how many billions of dollars in transactions are there in cashless in Australia at the moment, roughly?
Oh, geez.
8.4 billion.
Yeah.
$8.4 billion in
I'd say right now that's probably even under the mark, given COVID and the fact that we are essentially, for the first time in, you know, human history, living in probably a 98% to 90% completely cashless society right now, because there are very few open businesses anyway. But there are very few open businesses that will accept a cash payment at the current juncture of this pandemic has created.
And that's what I really want to hone in for the next few couple of minutes is cash now, given your insights and given your bid to get this company up and running, what kind of future does cash have?
Look, I mean,
it's still illegal. It's still illegal tender.
I think cash will always have a place, and I think there will always be a form of physical currency issued by a government for forever and a day. I don't think it will be ever completely gone. It will have a role. Now, whether it moves to gold coins that are stamped or it's plastic notes or whatever, I mean, who knows what the future brings. Regulators and governments obviously prefer a cashless society because it's easier for them to see funds and see money movement. And with that comes increased ability for tax collection and, you know, AusTrack for tracking, you know, undesirables doing inappropriate things and so on. But, you know, we live in an instant gratification transactional society now. You know, people are no longer thinking about 3, 6, 7 months in advance when it comes to things. They see something, they want it, they buy it. And that's sort of, you know, been why currently Afterpay is trading at, you know, $60 plus a share. You know, we are an instant gratification. And to do instant gratification, you have to have cashless environments and you have to have speed and efficiency for those transactions. Because otherwise, you know, cash becomes regardless of COVID, cash adds an element of someone going to a bank or an ATM, pulling money out, then going back, making sure they've got enough or they haven't got enough. And all. Whereas with digital transactions, you can use a raft of different sort of mechanics, you know, rings, phones, watches, you know, cards, all sorts of different things to tap or, you know, send an NFC sort of beacon style environment, all these different things to create a transaction. So from will cash die? No, I don't think it'll ever go away. Will we now, because of COVID, be forced into an environment where we are predominantly digital? Absolutely. How far we go with that? I honestly, and my personal opinion is, I fundamentally believe that over the next 2 to 3 years, we will even see the downturn in physical terminals. You know, and by terminal, I mean next to your POS, you've got the card reader that you insert your card in or you tap it on top where you even have to touch, you know, and enter your PIN. I believe that terminal side will even start to go away because people aren't going to want to touch things inside of, you know, restaurants and other sorts of environments where there's lots of people. They're going to want to be able to use the device that they've got, which they know is safe, and conduct transactions that way.
Yeah, Peter, let me tell you, the Reserve Bank of Australia have released data that shows that in 2007, 69% of Australians paid with cash. In 2016, it was 37%. So it drops from 69 to 37% inside 10 years. Recently, the RBA said that last year that figure had dropped to 25%, and that was pre-COVID. So the decline has been accelerating. It will hit a certain point where it will stay fairly stable, but I'd say there's been room for it still to move. COVID has accelerated that, and I think you'll find there'll be certain instances, you know, obviously vending machines, that type of stuff possibly, but there'll be, you know, kids' piggy banks and what have you. You'll get a certain type of transaction that will exist for cash, but I would say any sort of human person-to-person interaction or payment mechanism will be digital almost exclusively in the short term. And that'll be practically led, but it will also be a pandemic-driven factor as well.
Okay, well, let's hone in on the impact of COVID on your business, Alan. Has it been positive or negative in terms of impact? Well, or has it helped expedite your whole plan?
I feel terrible to say that COVID actually probably has been a benefit to our business. I feel bad for all the businesses that, you know, have had the opposite experience, and I don't say it lightly. We all know, not just, you know, people in, who, you know, who are working for businesses or the business owners themselves that have been terribly impacted by COVID. But for us, we're in the fortunate position of being pre-revenue. So as a startup, we're focusing exclusively at the moment on developing commercialization of our tech stack and our product range. So we're in the fortunate business that we, you know, we had no business to lose. But going forward, this is only upside for us because it's driving the movement away. And let me give you an example. We all saw during shutdown the way that restaurants and cafes pivoted towards home delivery and the ability to provide home delivery of their products. And there were even some retailers who were doing that as well. Now, none of these businesses had that functionality before COVID hit. So they had to very, very quickly set up online ordering They had to move their inventory online so the customers could make selections of their different product ranges and selections. And then they had to bolt in the payment services to make that happen. And that was all done very quickly on the fly. Never before has this space been so top of mind for businesses. And once they get past the shock and awe of what COVID has been to their businesses, we're going to be in the market, we'll have commercialized our products, and we'll be having conversations with them to say, well, that's great that you've had the pipe to handle the payment. Now let's start giving you the services and the data so you can sell more and reduce your fraud and drive it down.
Okay. Going forward, Alan, I'll fire this one at you as well. What's your plan to raise capital in the future? Will you launch an IPO?
It's absolutely in our plans, you betcha. So at the moment, we've been able to secure Cornerstone funding. They've got us, after our seed funding, we brought in a Cornerstone, which was fantastic. We've initiated a equity crowd fund for a capital raise, which is happening at the moment with On Market. So yes. If your listeners would like to pop along to onmarket.com.au, they'll see the raise there.
Nice and, plug, well done.
Thank you very much. That's been going. It's going very well. We've punched past the minimum raise, so the raise is definitely on, and that's quite pleasing. So that's going to go up to a maximum of 1 million in this raise. But most definitely, as far as an exit and a liquidity event is concerned, we have our eyes very much on that and IPO. When you look at the peers in our other in the fintech space. And probably the biggest two at the moment being Afterpay and ZipPay, and how successful they've been, notwithstanding a couple of little recent issues. But on the whole, absolutely, IPO would make an obvious choice.
Okay, and is there have you set your sights on a particular part of the market? Is there a sort of what's your ambition, your aspiration? Is it, or are you just going to? Have you had demand and interest coming through to you already?
One of the things that we've actually done is that rather than try to convince the market completely that we're right, as Alan mentioned at the start, which is sort of how I brought Alan on board originally, because I was sick and tired of trying to convince people that I was right. So that's a separate story. We've gone and developed our own suite of apps, and we've got our own applications, and we've got our own pathway forward with these applications to show the market and to show merchants that the concepts and the methodologies that we want to apply, we can walk the walk and talk the talk by doing it ourselves. So we've got a very keen interest in payroll and hospitality as well as petrol. We have a really keen interest in residential tenancies. And with that comes a very strong sort of emphasis at the back end on micro investing and roundup mechanics to help people, tuck away that little bit of extra dollars to help pay for things. So we've got a fairly broad sense of appetite in particular verticals, but at their core, they're all functioning the same way. So, it's very important for us that, the products that we're developing and convincing the marketplace from a wholesale level are worthwhile, we're deploying into key demographical environments, hospitality, retail, residential tenancies, where we sit on top of, we have an effective database of nearly 62% of the Australian marketplace.
Yeah, look, I think what's really interesting, and I think the real value add from my perspective is the fact that the data generation that comes with, I guess, the transaction. While there might be some kind of data and some kind of metric associated with transactions at the moment, I think the deep dive that the payment app seemingly provides is going to be something that's going to be quite interesting and worthwhile looking at, and something that's going to add some, as I say, value to a lot of businesses and, as you say, those online businesses. Gentlemen, before we wrap things up, is there anything else, any last words you'd like to let our listeners know that you already haven't told them?
I'm going to give this one to you. You've never been one to not take the last word, so you go right ahead.
I think, as I said before, we live in an instant gratification society. I refer to it as push button, get bacon. And the goal here for us is to facilitate that, regardless of how you want to pay or how you want to get paid, our goal is to facilitate that unique way that not only enables you to engage and be more interactive with your marketplace and have broader access to your marketplace, but enables you to communicate and, you know, as a consumer, engage more richly with the merchant. And I think that's sort of the underlying thing of what we're trying to do here at the Payment App. It's sort of why we've come together as a group and the different businesses we've got. And I think, you know, our goal is to be substantially more cost effective, because our methodology and how we're doing this is vastly different to everybody else's. You know, we are a SaaS play at our core, and with that comes our ability to reduce the cost for the whole marketplace.
Alan and Benjamin, thank you both for your time on the Small Caps podcast today. It's been a very interesting and eye-opening experience. Thank you again.
Thanks Peter.
Thanks, Peter.